How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. It is the first show of 2012. We've been doing a look back at 2011 over the last couple of weeks, and it is time to talk the new year. No shortage of things to talk about. We have a lot of news from the end of the year we still have not gotten into yet, including the retirement of Brock Lesnar following his fight with Alistair Overeem in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago. Also, last night's Strikeforce event. Interesting show in the sense that no mention made whatsoever that Chris Cyborg failed her test for steroids, and in doing so, is not only being stripped of the Strikeforce women's 145-pound title, but it appears the entire division is out the window. Main event of the March 3rd show is a female main event. Ronda Rousey is headlining the show versus Misha Tate for the 135-pound title. Sarah Kaufman left in the dust. She's fighting on the show. And essentially, a number one contenders match. If she wins, she gets a shot at the winner of that match. So, not only being passed over, but has to fight again before getting a title shot. We'll talk about that. Plus, a lot of wrestling news. The TLC pay-per-view a couple of weeks back. Tonight is the TNA Genesis pay-per-view, their first show of 2012. We're going to run over all of the matches on the show, give you our thoughts on those matches, give you some predictions as well. And then, later on this evening, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. In fact, immediately after this show goes off the air, Dave Meltzer is going to be up at WrestlingObserver.com doing live running play-by-play of that show. If you are one of the, I don't know how many, if you're not one of the 8,000 that are buying this pay-per-view, follow along with the play-by-play, and then later on this evening, myself and Dave Meltzer will be up with a brand new show talking all of the news in pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, and full results of that TNA Genesis pay-per-view. We had another show up last night as well, talking the Strikeforce show with Josh Gross of ESPN. So, a lot of stuff coming up today. We are going to kick it off after the first break. All of the news, pro wrestling, MMA, 2 full hours. So get ready. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet, Sports Byline, USA affiliates all over the country. And Mike, are you ready and prepared for the year 2012?
I think so. I mean, January is going to be a good judge of it. I mean, it's already started fast. We still have a bunch of other stuff coming up. Is there an FX show, I think? There's definitely the Fox show coming up. No shortage of things already in January, and that's going to set a tone for a very, very long year.
You know, in 1995, I'm sure I've mentioned this story on some show before, but in June of 1995, I started Figure Four Weekly, and in, like, the first two or three issues, I obviously wrote about a lot of things that had been going on, of course, and things that have been going on over the past month or two. And after I'd done about three issues, three straight weeks, one day I just thought, what if there stops being news? What am I going to do? I was young, everybody. But the point is, there's never any shortage of news. New news happens every day. And we've already had a ton of it in 2012. We've had more than our fair share of news in 2012. And we're going to start with something that actually happened in December, but the news didn't break until 2012. That being the suspension. It is now a one-year suspension. Chris Cyborg popped for Winstrel, essentially, Stanozolol, and she's out of action for a year. She is being stripped of the Strikeforce 145-pound title. The entire division appears to be disbanded, at least until, or if, I should say, Gina Carano comes back. And your thoughts on this happening. Mike, are you shocked? Should I color you shocked?
I'm stunned. I'm amazed. I'm yeah. Well, you know, all those, there were a million one jokes about Christian Cyborg Santos, and, well, you know, it validates some of them. Although, from her side, damn it, it must have been one of those tainted supplements again. I can't believe that this could happen to me, looking different than any other woman fighter, fighting differently than any other woman fighter. But okay, I guess somebody out there can believe, maybe Mr. Cyborg believes that it could have been a tainted supplement, but who's to say?
Part of me thinks that when you get popped for steroids and you get your 1-year suspension, if you claim I got it from a tainted supplement, you should have to produce a sample of said supplement. It should be tested, and it must come out positive. Otherwise, you get another year added to your sentence. Like in Lucha, where if you claim a low blow, but the referee finds out that you lied, you will be disqualified. I just think the whole the tainted supplement thing is like, it's laughable now. I mean, at this point, it's like, you know, I would have so much more respect for someone that just said, okay, well, you know, sorry, I screwed up. I'll take my year suspension. I apologize. I won't do it again. As opposed to, yeah, I had Statazolol in a supplement that I grabbed from GNC. That's, first off, it's preposterous. It's absolutely preposterous. It makes a mockery of everything. You know, it presumes that we're stupid, that the commission is stupid, that everybody's stupid, and it's infuriating. It's absolutely infuriating.
And you know, you said you should be able to produce said supplement. Now, if you're a state athletic commission, I would say absolutely not. We don't need your excuse of tainted supplement. You tested positive. We're done with that. Now, you could lead into that for a bigger thing from the UFC, which is, I'm sure, something we'll talk about, where if they were doing the testing, much like the National Football League does, they give their athletes a list of banned substances, and they put on there very clearly, make sure your doctor knows, make sure your agent knows, make sure everybody knows, if you buy something over the counter and you test positive, that's your fault. Now, you can take a product which is not on our list, because they do give them a list of things that they, you know, stand behind and know are quality products and they never have problems with. If you want to present them a product for testing, they will test it to you for you for free and find out. This happened with two Minnesota Vikings players with StarCaps, a diuretic, where they said, look, we bought these over the counter, and it came down to the NFL, and it went to court, and they ruled that, you know, it was the NFL had the right to say, you know, this is, you know, you took it over the counter. That was your responsibility to tell us to test these things. So if the UFC, which again, if the UFC wants to do their own testing and set up a program, the level of what sports have now or what it's turned into now, if they want to do that, then it makes sense to. But if I'm an athletic commission, I'm sorry, you should know what you're putting in your body. That's not us for us to worry about. That's it. I mean, they have enough. The state athletic commissions are a joke enough as it is. They don't need anything else on their plate.
The issue with this one is Chris Cyborg. It's funny. I don't know if anyone really wants to say this, but I'll say it. People used to always make jokes about Chris Cyborg. Everybody assumed that she was on steroids. I think that's pretty much a fact. There are always those people. You know, sometimes I would go to MMA message boards and there would be a post about Chris Cyborg is so obviously on steroids. And you'd always have those people that would say, oh, come on now, you know. There's always a defense of, you know, my girlfriend trained, she looks like that, or she's close, she's never been anything in her life. This is, of course, this is possible. And it's like, this is preposterous. But,
MMA's China.
Yeah, they'd always say that she's on steroids. Or they would always say, it's not fair to have a man fighting a woman. They would call her a man. Now, I'm not going to say that Christy Ann Cyborg is a man, because she's not. You know, she's a lovely woman. But what she was taking, what she was doing in taking steroids, was essentially putting the hormones in her body that make men, men. We're men due to our high testosterone content. Maybe not you, Mike, but your average man. No. But when you take that, that's, you know, that's what separates a man from a woman is the level of testosterone. Women have testosterone, but not nearly to the level of a man. So
and
when
body
you,
parts. When that, you, that also is a big difference.
Well, that's what they say. But, you know, if you take enough testosterone and you're a woman, then those differences, as we've seen So I've heard from the China video, those differences. Anyway, point is, so when you're a woman and you're taking male hormones and then you're going in there and fighting women, I mean, I'm not going to say that no woman can beat up a man or anything like that, but I can tell you that when Mrs. Cyborg, I heard from several people that Mrs. Cyborg in training would train with her husband, Mr. Cyborg, known as the husband of Mrs. Cyborg in MMA circles. But she would train with Mr. Cyborg, who is a much larger man. And she would just run that guy ragged, you know. And that's not a 145-pound man. That is a man who probably walks around, I don't know what he walks around at, like probably 185 or something like that. And she'd run this dude ragged in training. So now she's cutting down, filled with male hormones, to fight 145-pound women. I mean, this is beyond just like, you know, well, the argument of all these fighters, oh, you know, everyone's taking these things, so it's a level playing field. Hold on a second. No. This here is a deal where she could have really badly hurt some of these women that are going into this fight natural, or at least certainly not to the level that she was at, just from a, you know, a glance. It's only been one other woman, Karina Dam, who failed for steroids. No other woman has failed. And that's not saying no other woman was on this stuff. But certainly, visually, Mrs. Cyborg looked very different from every other woman, which led to all of these jokes. So it's one thing if you argue that, oh, you know, all of these guys are taking everything, so let's just let everyone take everything and just whatever. But this is a totally different situation here. I mean, she could have really badly hurt women going in there filled with male hormones and pounding on these small women.
Oh, it makes it more impressive to me what Gina Carano was able to do with her. Remember all that talk about Carano when we're getting in and out with Brock Lesnar, you know, as far as how good she was or any of that sort of stuff. Amazingly enough, made it around with Cyborg, which was incredibly impressive, even more so in hindsight.
All right, we're going to head to a break. We got more to talk about when we come back. We're going to talk about Brock Lesnar on the show as well. Plus, last night's Strikeforce event, TNA, from later on this afternoon, and a proposed shoot fight between WWE legends. Oh, yeah. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, everything under the sun that involves beatings. So we're talking about here today. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet, Sports Byline USA affiliates across the country. We've been talking about Mrs. Cyborg being popped for steroids in a supplement, she said, and the issues of drugs and MMA. And I don't want to talk about this all show. I just want to say that very quickly. To me, all you got to do, and I realize it's... actually, you know what? I'll say that. All you have to do, UFC has a lot of money. Not as much money as last year, but they got a lot of money. Pay-per-view buy rates are down, but they got $90 million coming in from the new Fox deal, which kicked off at the beginning of this year. And they're making a lot of money on pay-per-view still. They made a ton of money off that last Brock Lesnar fight, which unfortunately for them was the last Brock Lesnar fight. But the point is, they're making a lot of money. If they're serious about this, which based on how everything went with Alistair Overeem, I'm not sure, but a lot of that was also due to the commissions. If they're serious about this, UFC needs to institute their own drug testing. They need to hire a company that is going to send men out. Send men to the camps, not calling the fighters and going, you got 48 hours to supply a urine sample, but hey, you know, if you get it here 4 weeks later, it's okay, as was the case with Alistair Overeem and the Nevada State Athletic Commission. You need to hire a company that is going to send men out completely at random at any time, not just a month before the fight, but at any time. If you're preparing for a fight, you could get a knock on the door. If you're not even preparing for a fight, you may get a knock on the door. You never know when this guy is going to come. He's going to show up with a cup. He's going to go into the bathroom with you. You are going to pee into said cup, and he is going to take the sample, and it is going to be tested. Completely random, unannounced testing. If you're not going to do that, then I don't know why anybody's bothering with this. But if you want to clean up, that's really the only way to do it. I mean, there's a lot of other... Josh Gross last night was talking about lifetime suspensions and everything like that. I don't know if I'd go that far if you fail. But the fact of the matter is, that's step one. You need to do real, legit, honest-to-God, unannounced testing. And then we're talking.
Yeah, and it's... You know, the move, this is where we're at with, you know, legitimacy in sports. You know, in baseball, there's like 40 and 60 game suspensions in the minors, and that can travel up into the major leagues and things like that, you know, depending on the season. You know, lifetime suspensions, it would take, I mean, these are fighters, you know, it would take a lot to me to have a lifetime suspension for someone. But, you know, a couple years can be a lifetime to a guy. So that, you know, something like that may be enough. But yeah, they do have the money and the resources to do it. It's, you know, it's walking the line of, you know, you want to be a mainstream sport. You've made a lot of moves in that direction. That's what you want to be. You probably need to set up sooner rather than later. You know, do the PR first, you know, but get the guidelines set, get what you would want set as far as who you know, who it's going to be that you're, because again, you don't want to dump too many resources into testing, over testing every single guy. But when it comes to higher tier guys, when it comes to the stars and the backbone of the company, you know, for those guys, you test more. You obviously test everyone leading up to fights. Put those things into place, because you might as well do it now before it bites you, you know, worse later on. You can't trust the athletic commissions to do. You can't trust the athletic commissions to do what they're supposed to do, so they should be proactive going out there doing it because of their public image.
What are your thoughts on the doom?
Forget about the safety of the fighters, because realistically, if they could just be in a world with steroids, you know, being an accepted thing and nobody thinking about it, they'd have them there. All sports probably would.
Still not fair for those that don't want to do them.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right, Brian, but, you know, it's like talking about cyborg dropping, obviously filled with the male hormones, that's one aspect, but dropping in weight like she does, I mean, there's controversial things there, too, where, you know, if everybody was fighting at their natural weights, that would be a perfect world, but that's another thing that, again, is separate from the steroid issue, but is a health issue that needs to play in, because, you know, I brought up the Gamache Arturo Gatti fight where, you know, Gatti puts on 20 pounds overnight and almost kills him. We saw it with, I forget the Japanese fighter and Anthony Johnson, which was sick. You know, we saw it with, I mean, Cyborg going down and just killing people. It's that type of thing needs to be addressed too. And that's a wide ranging one because you have those problems in amateur wrestling and in a lot of different sports.
Well, while we're on the subject of weight cutting, keep in mind that the drug she was popped for is a steroid often used for cutting. You know, we only know what she got popped for. You know, maybe that was the only thing she was on, all right? But maybe she was on a lot of other stuff, and none of that showed up in the test because she cycled off at the right time. But she was still on the Winstrol to try to cut down and make 145. Because she walks around at 170. So here's a huge jacked up woman that walks around at 170 killing 145 pounders. Because apparently she used drugs to help get her to that weight. If that's what she was using this particular drug for. Which is often what many people use this drug for. So it's just an ugly situation, particularly in this particular case. Now, I want to get your thoughts on the doom of Brock Lesnar.
Well, what a, you know, a supernova by MMA terms, obviously, you know, that followed amateur wrestling a little bit, so I knew who he was, and obviously following through OVW when they were selling tapes and throughout his run in WWE, you know, for a lot longer. It's amazing to see his, you know, career, his professional career, the way it went and how he changed as a person and why he had changed and the things he had went through at the end and how he was able to drive MMA fans nuts and, you know, simultaneously pissing off wrestling fans with the way that he left to go play. He is a supernova, kind of an incredible story. And because he's not a gregarious guy who gives a lot of interviews or has always been Mr. Happy or anything like that, he's even got more of a, you know, a mystique. You know, it's just him taking the drug test, you know, a couple weeks ago where he couldn't take it because he was in such a remote location training. It's just, you know, Brock Lesnar, was just great for, you know, the University of Minnesota and for amateur wrestling because he was such a beast. He was great, obviously, in wrestling coming at a time after the invasion. I mean, with Paul Heyman, everything went perfectly there. And now through MMA, being such a big star and becoming a huge pay-per-view draw, it's too bad his career is going to come to an end, and I know there's going to be a lot of people who, you know, try to tear him down or demean it or poke holes in it or anything like that. But from a follower of all sport and a fan of entertainment and a fan of PR and all sorts of things, he was just, you know, what a perfect guy at a perfect time.
He was ruined by his surgery. I think that's...
I think it's easy to say. My brother had diverticulitis and had a very mild case of it, and he was hating his life. Had a, you know, the colonoscopy, whole nine yards. Imagine getting 15 inches of whatever it was of your colon removed and having it twice. It almost killed him. It wasn't like this was some joke, you know, where he got the flu or something like that, and people are trying to bring that up as, oh, poor Brock got sick. No, Brock almost died.
Yeah. He almost died the first time when he didn't need surgery. Well, he needed surgery, but he didn't get the surgery. But, you know, the second time around, it was like, okay, I need to get surgery on this thing. Yeah, it's, I don't know, what's your prediction? Did you predict Lesnar or Overeem?
I picked Lesnar, but, you know, if I would listen more to the people that were leading up to it, like, you know, Dave and a couple other people, I mean, I didn't realize how out of it Brock was.
In terms of his disease?
Well, no, just in terms of, you know, because there's been that change over the last couple of years of, you know, Brock's not the same monster he was. He's grown up. He's more reflective now since going through all this stuff, the family stuff, all that. And, you know, he got touched for the first time and, you know, they came back and, yeah, he beat Carwin, but got knocked out, you know, by, Christ, almost said Rico Rodriguez. I'm so sorry, Cain Velasquez, for almost doing that to you. But, you know, coming back from all that, and he didn't look like Brock Lesnar. He looked like a guy playing Brock Lesnar going into that Overeem fight, and I didn't expect that. I just mentally, even though I knew he had been out for a long time, I expected a different Brock Lesnar, and it was, you know, when he announced his retirement afterwards, it was like, nope, no complaints there.
I expected a shooting Brock Lesnar.
I've heard that, and you know what? I did too, and that was... That was the big thing. It's not, I don't rip Brock Lesnar for not going for it. That's how that fight was just going to go. I think no matter what, that's how that fight was going to go.
I just felt that Todd and I don't know if many of you have heard this, but we had a disagreement.
Todd Martin?
About this on Wednesday. I like to, I don't know, I don't want to say I like to troll Todd, but... I will say that if Todd's listening, you were right. Overeem did win. I know that. Anyway, the point is, my whole thought was, all right, yeah, you're not guaranteed a takedown when you try an explosive double leg. And even if you get it, there's no guarantee the guy is not getting back up. But you want to know what? If you stay on your feet with the guy, he's going to beat you. I mean, it's just a fact. So I thought you may as well try at least one explosive double leg. You try one time, you know what? Maybe you'll get guillotine. Maybe you will. Maybe you will get guillotine. Maybe there's even a 70% chance you'd get guillotine. Overeem has a great guillotine. Maybe that would happen. But there's a 100% chance that if you stand with the guy, you're going to get knocked out. So I just thought that maybe he should try one explosive double leg. That was just my thought.
And you're right. But he didn't.
No, he didn't. He didn't. But you know what? It's all over now. And, you know, there's a very good chance.
From pride.
I'll say this again. There's a very good chance, had he shot that explosive double leg, that that Overeem would have gotten up and done the exact same thing. That is probably what we'd be talking about today, because it was very clear that Brock is done as a fighter. But we'll talk more about this after the break, plus some pro wrestling. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Plus, Sports Byline affiliates nationwide talking about the doom of Brock Lesnar in MMA. He's more than likely, at some point, going to make well over $1 million doing a pro wrestling match at WrestleMania. It is exceedingly unlikely, though not impossible, of course, that this will take place this year. Most likely, it will not take place. There is a chance it may not take place until 2013, maybe even 2014. I would guess probably next year's WrestleMania. There is a slim possibility that it would happen this year. The reason being that they've got a network to launch, and they need as much publicity for this network as humanly possible. And so throwing Brock Lesnar on a show where he is not needed merely for the publicity of it all, there's no 100% guarantee that that will not happen. I think they're going to be okay just with The Rock, but you know, we're January 8th here, and the network is supposedly debuting April 1st, and they got nothing. You know, they're about to tape Legend House. That's as far as they've gotten here. So, I don't know. We shall see. But presumably, this... What's so funny?
I remember when the first time they showed the commercial for Legends House, when they were going through, we announced the network, they got the strobe effect going, and I remember it flashed across, and I remember I put something up on Twitter. I forget what it was, but it was just like, Legends House. And then you did a show with Vinny, I think it was, right after that, and it was the same thing where it's like, and that's what everybody says, Legends House, and it figures that that's the show that they get off the ground first.
Yeah. Legend House. I was just laughing that they've got a giant creative team, and the best name they could come up with for this stupid show was Legend House.
And Sheiky Baby's in?
They're saying Sheik is in. The only person I know for sure is in is Roddy Piper, who is supposedly a calmer, gentler Roddy Piper.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
He's
anyway.
Going to be the Gary Busey of the show.
He could be. Kind of looks like Gary Busey a little bit.
Hmm.
But anyway, the point of all of this is the funny thing about the return of Brock Lesnar to WrestleMania, and he's not going full-time on the road, everybody, is the two matches they're talking about are The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, which, of course, they already shot an angle for that went nowhere because they shot the angle before they talked to Dana, and the potential of a Steve Austin-Brock Lesnar match. And both of those I find funny because Brock Lesnar, God bless him, he's still a big, strong, scary dude. And he's not going to go in there trying to hurt anybody. But it's not like he's going to be, you know, on the road for a year prior to having this match. He's probably going to be a little rusty in the ring. And he's going to either go up against Undertaker, who's so banged up that he wrestles one time per year, or Steve Austin, who has not wrestled for nearly a decade because his neck is broken and he could be killed with a bad bump. I don't like these two ideas.
No, especially when the link you have to Steve Austin and Brock Lesnar comes off the brand split. And no one remembers that anyway. No one cares about that anyway. So you don't have to do it. And Steve Austin, again, on its own, this is another reason why you could wait till 2014. Undertaker, I don't know what else you could do with Undertaker, although Undertaker-Lesnar to me would make sense, but you don't need him this year, you won't need him next year because you would have Steve Austin in somebody, so you could wait till after that. And you can have Brock Lesnar, if you know, from Dana White, if he okays it, doing publicity around WrestleMania or interviews or well-placed things here or there where, you know, you could utilize him that way. You don't necessarily need him in the ring. But, yeah, I don't know who you put him in there with. Again, if I'm Austin, no, because I would rather see Austin and somebody else. But and to me, Brock and Undertaker, as banged up as he is, that would be the one that would make the most sense to me.
The key to the match is, and the reason these names are being brought up, is because Undertaker and Brock Lesnar are two dudes that to this day, their aura of being tough dudes, not necessarily shooters or anything like that, because neither had a reputation of being a shooter, but the aura of them being tough guys, they still have it, you know? Realistically, Jack Swagger would destroy The Undertaker and Steve Austin, maybe at the same time. That's a guy that's a legit shooter. But nobody would buy for 2 seconds a Brock Lesnar-Jack Swagger match because nobody takes Jack Swagger seriously due to how he's portrayed on TV. But Undertaker and Steve Austin still have that aura about them. These are two tough dudes, tough old dudes that will take a pounding and give a pounding back. And I know people are going to say, oh, Brian Undertaker, he's got this supernatural gimmick, blah, blah, blah. No, when Undertaker and Brock Lesnar did that stare down, you know, 3 million views on YouTube, okay? Because Undertaker still has that aura about him. You know, people can look past the light shows and everything like that and just see Undertaker as the old, grizzled, mean-looking veteran who doesn't do stupid comedy skits. So that's the key to the match, really, is you take a guy who's legit in Brock Lesnar, and you take a guy who the fans think, hey, that's a tough dude. That's a big-name tough guy right there. Not like Haku back in the 90s, where they always told you he was tough, and then he lost every match. Two tough legends against Brock Lesnar. They both work. I'm just afraid that Brock would injure someone badly.
I'll give him more credit than that. Against The Undertaker, I'll give him more credit than that. But you have to be careful. Well, you don't have to be careful. No one's going to believe, I don't think. Who's going to beat The Undertaker and break the streak? Nobody. And they should never do it. They should just wrestle one time a year at WrestleMania, have them something special built up from, you know, the beginning of the year onward, you know, to WrestleMania every single year. Yeah, it's gimmicky. Yeah, you see it coming. But who cares? As long as it's, you know, what it's been every year and The Undertaker can still do it, absolutely go ahead and still do it. So you go into what's the best storyline. You know, there's a, you know, Wade Barrett, you know, if you can build him up, he might be a choice against The Undertaker, but no one's going to believe that he's going to break the streak. So they played into a story. You know, he and Triple H and, you know, playing off Shawn Michaels saying you can't win. You know, I don't think anyone thought Undertaker was going to kill Triple H. You know, it was just, okay, or Triple H was going to beat The Undertaker. They just wanted a good story. Same thing going into this one. If you have Brock and The Undertaker, you just have a good story. And that's where, that's going to be the only thing, is running out of guys to give The Undertaker every year where it's still a good story, but it's something that could have legs for a little while. Again, that's why you wouldn't have to do it this year, but it's probably better to do it sooner rather than later.
I just think with
Brock's going to kill him.
I think with Brock, I think that, like, you and I and most of the people listening to this know that Undertaker's streak is not going to be broken. But let me tell you something, Mike. I was at WrestleMania last year when Triple H hit Undertaker with that tombstone. And I, as God is my witness, almost every single solitary person in that building. And keep in mind, these are the hardest of the hardcore WWE fans, because they come in from all over the world for this show. 95% of the people in that building thought that the streak was broken right there by that tombstone. Because I was there in the middle of it. Like, I've never seen anything like that. When he got hit with that tombstone and then when he kicked out, that was probably the biggest ovation I've ever seen live. So you can convince people that Undertaker is going to lose. You got to be really good. And after watching Triple H's return matches this year, I don't think that their return match at WrestleMania this year, Undertaker and Hunter, is going to be nearly as good as last year. But you never know.
I don't know. I think it's because 95% of the people in there are wrestling fans, and are so they get so into it, and they're whipped into such a frenzy. It's how wrestling, you know, should be to draw you in. I think that's why they pop, you know, when they're, that's why it worked the way it did. I don't think if they would have snapped out of it for a second, shook their head, they would have went, oh, yeah.
Yeah, nah. But in the moment, they bought it. You want to know one of the reasons they bought it? They bought it because his opponent was the son-in-law of Vince. I firmly believe this. They thought if anybody has a big enough ego to book himself as breaking the streak of The Undertaker, it's Triple H. I think people in the back of their mind had that. They had that thought of, okay, you know what? If anybody's going to do it, it's going to be Hunter. Okay? I think that there is a portion of the wrestling audience, not you and I and probably many of the people listening to this, but your average fan out on the street, that may be able to convince himself that this is Brock Lesnar. He was a former UFC champion. He fought in real fights. He was a huge star. He has not wrestled in years. And there's no way he's just coming back to lose to The Undertaker. I think there are people that will convince themselves of that, and they will argue that point, that Brock is not going to come back just to lose to The Undertaker. The only reason he would come back is to break the streak. I think there are people that will convince themselves of that. That's not true. He'll come back and do a job, no problem. But I think that there are going to be people that can convince themselves of that.
Well, that'll make WWE very happy that at least one time a year.
Yeah. Probably the only time. I can't think of really anybody else that they could. You know, I think maybe this year there are some people that will convince themselves. They'll go, oh, it's Hunter. There's no way he's going to lose two times in a row. You know, that's why they're doing the Shawn Michaels' referee gimmick so that Undertaker has an out. You know, I think there are people that are going to convince themselves that maybe this is the year that it happens. You know, Hunter breaks it at 20 or whatever the deal is, but I don't know. I guess we'll see. So there you go. That's 2013, most likely. There is a lot of talk next year that Steve Austin will return, which would mean, actually, that probably you would get, I don't know, Steve Austin versus somebody and Undertaker versus Brock, unless you wanted to do Steve Austin versus Brock as the main event of WrestleMania 2013. But I think that... actually, let me ask you, what do you think of that idea in the sense that if you did Steve Austin versus Brock as a headliner of WrestleMania, it's essentially two outsiders getting the top spot, which I could just see the locker room, just those that don't understand business, going nuts over. But at least this year with Rock, you've got a guy coming in from the outside facing a guy who's on the road every day. What do you think of the idea of Austin, Brock, two outsiders headlining the biggest show of the year?
Well, if I was going outsider, I'd definitely do Austin and Mrs. Cyborg. But if that option wasn't available, if you do Austin Lesnar, I understand what you mean about the money, and it's the best windfall, and no matter what, it would be great. But since times aren't good, there is going to be truth coming out of that locker room with a little bit of, you know, they push-pull on guys so much. Again, Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, R-Truth, Alberto Del Rio, CM Punk. It's on and on and on and on. They haven't had any breakout stars. So, yeah, I mean, I can see some disappointment there with guys being just pushed further down the card or feeling that's the case. But, yeah, I mean, overall for their money, that's the best-case scenario. And it would be, again, it's depending on how you're looking at it, it would be huge. As long as the rest of the card is treated with respect and times are good leading up to it, I don't think anyone's going to care. Nobody cared when it was, you know, Hogan, or not Hogan, Rock, but around that era and in the couple before that, during the end of the Attitude Era, when everything was popping all up and down the card and everybody was making money and things were good, you know, there's going to be personality conflicts and people won't like it, you know, that they're up tops, but doesn't matter.
You're always going to have people crying, even if times are good.
Yeah.
You'll always have people crying that, oh, these guys are never on the road, they're not paying their dues, why do they get to headline? But who cares about those people?
Because they made millions.
And they're going to make you millions. Maybe not millions, mm-hmm. But they're going to make you some money. Anyway, we're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment talking more. Got a TNA pay-per-view lineup to get into as well. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Short segment here, so before we go to our top of the hour break, Mike, any other thoughts on last night's Strikeforce event?
Not a whole heck of a lot. It was a show, and it was free preview weekend on Strikeforce. I would have taken, we're on Showtime, I would have taken more advantage of that, and because of the nature of the show, basically it was, you know, to showcase King Mo and to showcase Lou Rockhold, and they weren't, you know, epic matchups or anything like this. Tyler Safadine, it's guys who, it's some of the only guys Strikeforce has, and they're going to have to try to promote them and build around these guys. I would have actually, because it was a free weekend for people with the opportunity to see, I would have introduced more video packages and had a couple more interviews and things like that, maybe had one less fight, because it wouldn't have missed it whatsoever. It was a decent strike force, you know, it was a B-level strike force show. It was a diehard fan show. There was nothing wrong with it. I can see how people would complain, well, this is the reason there's too many shows and things like that, but I don't agree. It was like a Friday Night Fights type of show. It was free MMA. It was not awful. I don't know how you can complain about that, other than the refereeing, because that actually was pretty awful. Well, that and the judging.
I thought the first two matches were god-awful. Actually, the first match was just kind of a boring fight, but that Tyrone Woodley fight, I thought was just so absolutely god-awful. I thought that was a fight that, like, you know, your average fan, not even your average fan, your fan that knows nothing about MMA and tunes in on the free preview weekend, and they see Tyrone Woodley lying on this dude like a wet blanket and not even trying to get in a better position, and the other dude not trying to do anything to get away. I just thought that fight was hideous. I just thought that was a hideous, hideous fight. And it'll be interesting to see the numbers, if we get like the hourly breakdown or the quarter hour breakdown or anything like that, to see if like thousands and thousands of people tuned out of that fight. I mean, if they stayed for the last two fights, you had two great knockouts, so that was cool, except for a late stoppage in the main event. But for your average fan, those two fights just hideous. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here to talk a lot of different things, including, in the next segment, the TNA pay-per-view tonight. Genesis, the first pay-per-view of 2012. We're going to be previewing that here on the first Wrestling Observer Live of 2012. What a coincidence that is. We're talking about all of that, plus all of the news, really, from the last 3 weeks. We have been off live shows for the last 3 weeks, but we are now back and talking about things from the last couple of days. Should be interesting. And Mike, since this is a short segment, we're going to wrap up our Strikeforce talk. Wanted to make sure you had a chance to talk about the... Oh, my God. Keith Jardine and Luke Rockhold promoting their main event last night. All I know is that Luke Rockhold, I thought, was just like a black hole of charisma. But when Keith Jardine came out to hype up the main event, I thought, man, I apologize to Luke Rockhold. You were Ric Flair in your prime compared to Keith Jardine here. I was watching with a friend of mine, and he was just like, he was laughing hysterically at the Keith Jardine promo. It was so bad. And then Keith Jardine got beaten bad. But thoughts on those two. And then King Mo apparently had an awesome post-fight promo.
Well, I don't think nobody, I mean, Luke Rockhold, it was just like, he should just stand there and smile like Chris Jericho did on Raw on Monday night. That would have been fine. You know, but more, it was, again, expecting more in hyping up the fact that the UFC has come in and, you know, this is what we have coming up for the year. I didn't know we were going to get five fights. I thought we'd at least get three in video packages and things like that. And Misha Tate's promo, it was good in that she talked about Ronda Rousey and everything, but I really wish it would have had Rousey there or had some sort of counterbalance, because, you know, Tate was good, but it wasn't all that exciting. And Mighty Mo, a guy who can, you know, go off at the mouth and is incredibly, you know, entertaining, he didn't, I thought he should have just done a little bit more too, considering, you know, Strikeforce, again, needs as much hype as they can get, because when you look at Strikeforce, you just go, when are they going to be in UFC?
Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Not sure if anybody could tell in that opening segment at the top of the hour, but I was on death's door due to starvation, and I had to eat something before during the break. And as I'm looking around, we do a Christmas show every year, where people send us various holiday gifts and cheer, and usually I've had maybe a sip or two of eggnog. Anyway, I don't know where half this stuff came from, but in looking around for something to snack on, I found some little chocolate bars here, which I believe are from another land. Alpine Continental was this one here. And there was another one, Viennese something. But anyway, the point is, when looking around at my desk, I also found a box of Hogan Energy. I don't know if you guys have ever even heard of this. I had not until actually moments ago. But Hogan Energy here. There's a picture of Hulk Hogan on the box, and it says, fast energy and powerful nutrition. Hogan Energy, you want energy, brother? Now you've got it. And Hogan is doing a Hogan pose, and lightning bolts are coming out of him to illustrate the energy contained in this deal here. I've got the Citrus Rush Extreme Energy Granules. There are 20 stick packs. So apparently what these are they're little packets of energy, fast-melting granules. It says, for adults and children over the age of 12, you pour the fast-melting granules into your mouth, and you let them dissolve on your tongue. Not recommended for children under 12 or people sensitive to caffeine. Limit to 3 stick packs per day, it says. And apparently there's 75 milligrams of caffeine in this little stick pack here. It says, fast-melting granules, hours of energy, enhanced focus, and no crash or jitters. And you can get more of these at HulkHogan.com. I can't believe I just plugged that on the air. But have you ever seen these, Mike?
I was actually sent a picture of it, because I believe if you go to Las Vegas Nutrition, our friend Mike Sawyer's store, he'll actually have this for you. I'm not sure exactly how it works or anything like that. Just sounds like one of those 5-hour energy stimulant sort of things or something like that, just in dissolving citrus rush form. But, you know, if I just don't know. I don't know if I want Hulk Hogan being the one to give me energy.
The ingredients,
that popping machine never really worked out.
The ingredients here, there's a bunch of vitamins, caffeine, and I'm a little concerned down below here. Other ingredients, xylitol. X-Y-L-I-T-O-L. I've never even heard of that before.
You know where it comes from, don't you?
Xylitol?
Yeah.
The Zions plant? I don't know.
Parts unknown.
This is filled with parts unknown. Vegetables.
And what better product for a guy who is pimping Aaron Rent's furniture or whatever it is? Well, what a better product to promote than this?
Yeah, listen to this. In this little thing is vegetable fat. Really? I'm going to put that in my body? You know what I'm going to do before we get going here talking about the TNA pay-per-view? I'm going to need some energy to talk about this. So I'm going to take one of these little extreme energy granules here on the air, everybody. I'm going to find out what these things do. They come in little packets. There's 20 of them in a box.
You better be careful about this. Now, we're talking about the UFC. I don't want Sports Byline or Dave Meltzer to send anyone over to your house.
What do you mean, send someone over?
Because you never know. This could be some sort of voice steroids.
This could, in fact, be a tainted supplement I'm about to take. But I'm going to give it a shot. Because they're available over the counter. Mike Sawyer's store carries them, you say?
I believe so. He's the one who sent me the picture. It was very nice because, in true Hulk Hogan form, with him having something on it, I mean, it's just the picture. I got to pull it up here as you take this.
This smells hideous, by the way. Wasted 5 minutes of my life on this, everybody. So this better be good radio. All right, I'm gonna put these granules.
How potent is the smell here?
Yeah, it smells terrible, doesn't it?
You want energy, brother? Now you've got it.
Okay, I'm gonna apply these granules under my tongue.
Is there a tingling sensation? Is it like Pop Rocks?
They're not melting very fast. Not gonna lie.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
Ooh, the pain lets you know it's working.
Is that what it says?
No, but I'm assuming that onset's going to come soon.
All righty, there we go. Wow. Well, let's get this show on the road, everybody.
Be an update next week when if those come out like kidney stones.
Yeah, you should get an update in about 30 seconds, I'd guess. All right. We've got TNA Genesis.
This is like waiting for the onset of an LSD trip to come on, and then immediately it's not like you turn on, you know, something relaxing or something like that. You turn on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre when discussing TNA, waiting for this to come on.
I'm expecting
like,
all of a sudden...
You need anything to get yourself more excited about TNA.
I need two of these. Even though it says, I can take three a day, so we may keep taking these during this TNA preview. I'm expecting all of a sudden be doing headstands like Dolph Ziggler at any moment now. All right. By the way, everybody, Genesis 2012... For those of you that don't go to church, Genesis is the first book of the Holy Bible. Do you know that, Mike?
I am the stone that the builder refused. Of course I know that.
That's a fact. What's funny is that on the Wikipedia here, there's a photo of the Genesis pay-per-view, which has four Jeff Hardys on it. I don't know if the Lord took out three ribs on Jeff and made clones or what the deal is here, but... Underneath the poster, it says taglines. You know what the tagline of this pay-per-view is, Mike?
I do not.
The tagline is, on the eighth day. Because you see, on the eighth day, God apparently created TNA.
Oh, I thought he was chilling.
No, that's why he quit. That was his
final
creation. And he went, hold on a second. I need to retire immediately. All right. Bobby Roode and Jeff Hardy for the TNA title. Thoughts on this match?
They shouldn't be having it. This should still be Bobby Roode and James Storm. I mean, it's cool. I mean, there are far worse matches that can fill the timeline going on here until you get back to Roode and Storm. So, I mean, it's okay. It's not like it was a great natural transition of Hardy coming out of the feud with Jarrett and everything, but, you know, fine. It's going to be okay.
It's for the title, of course, and I'd be surprised if Jeff Hardy won the belt. I suppose you never know. But obviously Bobby Roode, James Storm is the long-term plan. And believe it or not, in TNA they do have long-term plans, unlike WWE most of the time.
Hopefully they realize Jeff Hardy doesn't need that belt anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if the belt... Enough. I mean, this is one of the problems... Well, never mind. They could go on forever.
Funny thing, Mike, is when you say that so-and-so doesn't need the belt, kind of an antiquated term in the sense that there was a point where a guy could use the belt. Now the belt does not mean anything.
True.
The belt is not going to draw regardless of who it's on. So it doesn't matter who has the belt. But I expect Bobby Roode to retain. We have Kurt Angle versus James Storm. They are going to be having a singles match.
I hope they go really hard for, like, 10 minutes. I don't want to see a 30-minute James Storm dragged out that long. I just want to see something high impact. I want to see basically a pro wrestling fight for, like, 10, 12 minutes tops.
I think hopefully
James Storm gets the nod.
Much of this pay-per-view is going to depend on the crowd. I saw Kurt Angle and James Storm have a match on television that was outstanding. And it was largely due... I mean, it was a good match, but the crowd was just into absolutely every single thing. I saw another match they had on pay-per-view that was an absolutely dead crowd. Plus, Kurt Angle was not 100%. And the match was just like it existed. If Kurt Angle is relatively healthy... And if the crowd is a strong crowd here at the Impact Zone, this could actually be a great match. I am hoping it will be. Believe me, everybody, all I want is for TNA to have great matches up and down the show. Because I got to watch the show one way or the other. I'd rather watch a good show. So I have high hopes for Angle and Storm, perhaps against my better judgment. We're going to run down the rest of the pay-per-view after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Time flies when you've had Hogan energy. I shouldn't be plugging this here on the air unless the Hulkster is going to toss a few bucks my way.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling like I should have had a five-hour energy, to be honest with you. And they should be paying me, too. I'd be a great spokesman for five-hour energy. If they're listening, I'm your man. All right, we're talking about the TNA pay-per-view. TNA Genesis takes place tonight. 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Coincidentally, moments after this show those off the air. If you want to watch the show, it's live on pay-per-view. If not, Dave Meltzer, live running play-by-play on the front page of the website. Dave and I are also going to be up later on this evening with a brand new radio show only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a subscription area. It's $10.99 a month, and essentially we do shows every single day. So if you love this show and you only get to hear it one time per week, if you have $10.99 lying around, you can sign up, and for a full month, you can get a show every single day. And we also have archives. So really, if you pay your $10.99, you have access to every show that we have done since June of 2005 because they're all archived on the site. That's a lot of audio. So if you love audio, and let's say you live in Seattle, and the new 520 toll bridge is causing you to no longer take that bridge, and you've got an even longer commute, well, boy, oh boy, will you have stuff to listen to. And it ain't going to be so bad. Anyway, the Genesis pay-per-view here tonight. We've run down two of the matches. Let's continue trudging along here. D'Angelo De Niro and D-Von in a singles match. This is a feud that will never end. What are your thoughts about this one?
Is somebody going to be a pimp slap tonight? I like D-Von. I like the Pope. It's a bad soap opera that's been going on for too long. It's just goofy. It doesn't make any sense. It's just a goofy way to fill time, and it's a real waste of both of these guys.
How are them boys going to get involved?
Hopefully it would actually be with them boys just coming down and clearing the ring in the name of the Briscoe brothers, but since that won't happen, I would assume they're going to keep this going, because why not? I mean, I would actually just have them turn on Pope and then side up with Dad and then be done with it. But if they're going to be regular characters, I would assume that they screwed Dad, you know, outright. They beat him down, you know, all themselves, and allow Pope to get the pin.
We have Gail Kim versus the cannonballing Mickey James for the TNA. I presume you saw that then, Mike.
Yeah.
And they did a skit, everybody.
Early in the broadcast.
Yeah, those of you that don't watch Impact. Madison's buttocks were walking around the pool area, and she saw in the pool Tracy Brooks. She proceeded to get in the pool and splash Tracy with water. Yeah.
And this caused, what you would do when you were, like, 7 years old, where you, like, cup
younger.
Your hands and push the water at somebody, and you're like, eh, no, stop, and just like that.
Yeah. And so Tracy attacked her in the pool, and then Madison's buddy Gail jumped in.
Who was filming,
jumped in. Thankfully, she didn't take the camera into the pool with her, or they'd all be dead.
Set it down perfectly, though, which was okay, because Gail Kim in a swimsuit is fine.
So she leaps into the pool, and they proceed to try to drown everybody, Tracy Brooks, at which point, flying in from off screen, doing a giant cannonball and waving her arms, is Mickey James, splashed into the pool in the heels bail. I'm not making a second of this up. This all
Everybody
really happened on television.
The pool.
Yeah. That led to a match later. I thought it was awesome. I don't know about you. I love any angle that involves water and swimming pools.
But Spring Break Nitro, Mysterio, flipping Flair into the pool, it was not.
But that's undoubtedly true. It's better when someone gets thrown into the pool as opposed to starting in the water and getting out. It's my opinion.
It's for how they present things, you know, and just the fact that when I can watch TNA completely numb and I don't think about it and it's just kind of a numb feeling, I'm fine with it because I know the match tonight is going to be good, so I have no problem there. It's just I would not have put that, you know, in a perfect world, you don't, I don't know what you do with that, but you don't have it right after your main part of the first segment. I thought it was really, I just thought that was odd, but I could be wrong.
They're having a singles match for the Knockouts Championship. What's your is Mickey winning the title back here? Does it even matter?
I don't think it even matters, but I would actually think Gail Kim keeps it, because at some point Madison's going to be too annoying, and they just love having it's just the nonstop. I mean, they make light of it themselves, yet they continue to do it anyway. The partners who hate each other.
It is a common theme in TNA, which, in fact, brings us to the tag team title match, where the winners of the wild card tag team tournament, Crimson and Matt Morgan, actually they're the champions, the winners were Samoa Joe and Magnus. These four men squaring off in a tag team match for the world titles. Joe and Magnus actually got along throughout the tournament and won the whole thing. It was astonishing. But I actually like them as a team, which means it's probably inevitable that they're going to lose.
Yeah, I like them both, too. I mean, you know, Magnus is still young. You know, if they actually, again, it's like believing in tag teams, heaven forbid. But it would be a team that actually works. It gives them both something to do. And, you know, the only good part about having Crimson and Matt Morgan together as tag team partners is they don't fill two slots on the card when they wrestle in singles matches.
That's
but
true.
With that said, I would rather see Joe and Magnus with the titles and do something with them. I mean, again, anything with them. Look, Kid Cash has played his way out to me. This whole Sorenston, Zema, Ion, Aries thing has run its course. Have Kid Cash team up with somebody and wrestle Samoa Joe and somebody else to get, you know, again, to help Magnus out, get him better, and make use of the belts with what would be good matches.
You know, this is going to sound astonishing, but I like Joe and Magnus as a team, but I think they need to keep the titles on Crimson and Morgan. And the reason for that is because Crimson and Matt Morgan are not very good in the ring. But as a team, as noted, they are better only having one match per show than two, number one. And number two, Crimson and Matt Morgan actually look like a world championship tag team. You know what I mean? They actually look like, here is a team that cannot be beat. Unfortunately, they can't really back it up in the ring, but you can't win them all. But they just got the titles.
Chuck Colombo and Sean O'Hare.
Nowadays, they'd look like a menacing tag team, actually.
Yeah, I guess actually they would now. Yes, they would.
And you look at when you look at the roster of TNA and everything like that, I mean, they may be the best bet for tag team champions right now. They just got the belts. Leave the belts on them. Have them run roughshod through the division for 6 months and then put a team together to beat them. You know, I'm fine with that. So, and I expect them to win tonight, but we shall see. You talked about the Sorensen Ion, named after the television network. Austin Aries versus Kid Cash, Jesse Sorensen, Zema Ion, TNA X Division title. I feel like I've seen some version of this match 1,000 times. They're going to do a lot of flips. The crowd is going to cheer. It ain't going to matter. And hopefully Austin Aries retains the title. I could see them potentially putting it on Jesse Sorensen. I don't think there's any reason to put it on Cash and Zema Ion, no. So, yeah, that's my thought.
I just want to see Austin Aries against somebody else. I mean, Kid Cash, I'm fine having around. Jesse Sorensen, I'm not, and Zema Ion, I'm not that huge of fans of. So it's, you know, as long as it's Aries retaining and, you know, continuing to defend against somebody because he can, you know, work any style. And the promos and how he presents himself the whole nine yards. So as long as he wins, I'm happy.
Abyss and Bully Ray in a Monsters Ball match, which back in the day involved men getting locked in a room for 24 hours with no food or water before the match. Which to me sounds like if I'm a promoter and I want guys to have a good match, the last thing I would do is lock them in a room for 24 hours with no food, water, or light before the battle begins. But that's supposedly the game. I think they've gotten rid of that part of it. But yeah, you come
I'm
out.
I'm surprised that Vince Russo, in this entire time, with as much as he loves movies and taking Monsters Ball, I'm surprised he hasn't brought in the former Jacqueline to come in playing Halle Berry's part and at some point have maybe Eric Young play Billy Bob Thornton's part and then just have that randomly inserted, you know, the one part with her topless. I can't believe Russo's never even thought of that.
Probably has. Maybe he's been shot down.
I like Bully Ray. So I hate Abyss because I hate what they've done to Abyss. I just, you know, they've killed him. He, Eric Young, there's a couple of them that to me are just, I'm so mentally dead on them that I don't care. I don't care what he does in this match.
Hold on. To steal a Todd Martin phrase, you put Abyss and Eric Young in the same tier?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Here's why. if there, it's not like a Mark Henry. It's not like how WWE has pushed guys that I know screwed them up too. Henry, I still believe, is a killer. Abyss, I see as a sideshow carny freak. He's going to put his hand in the glass. He'll do this. He'll do that. The crowd, when he does it, will then still chant whatever comes next. Fire. We want whatever. It doesn't matter. He's a caricature of what he was when he came in. He's just a sideshow. He's a complete sideshow. He was more legitimate when Goldilocks and Alex Shelley were with him. It's just, he is a sideshow, and Eric Young is a sideshow. And to me, mentally, I don't know how they do it, how they would get me back on them. They are dead-ass characters to me. And this whole thing has been carried by Bully Ray, because Bully Ray is fantastic.
I'm not as down on Abyss as you are. Yes, all of that is true. Although, really, for the last 4, 5, 6 months, he hasn't done any of that carny stuff. And I always thought that Abyss, when he's given good material, I think he's got great promos. I love an Abyss promo. I love a Bully Ray promo, which is ironic because they never really had segments where they cut promos on each other. I mean, they did a little bit, but they could have had like an interview segment on every show. And with these two guys, guaranteed it would be great. But they didn't do that. Anyway, we are going to head to a break. We'll finish up the rest of the card, talk more after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We are running down the Genesis pay-per-view, taking place moments after we go off the air. And if you're ordering the show, we're going to be doing a recap program later on this evening, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. You can head up and listen to that after the show. Also, Dave Meltzer, live running play-by-play of the pay-per-view on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com, starting at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, so check that out. Two more matches in the rundown of the pay-per-view here. I believe we got two more here. We got Rob Van Dam versus Gunner. What do you think?
I think I want Ric Flair to do commentary throughout the whole thing, and I'll be fine with it. I don't know. Gunner, RVD works an RVD match, and I don't know if this past week was any indication. I don't want to see this again, but I don't mind seeing it if it's 5 minutes long and it's got Flair's Follies.
Now, we talked very briefly about the Abyss Bully Ray and how you put Abyss in the same tier as Eric Young, but we did not mention the Monster Ball match. Stipulation being, if Abyss loses, he is forced to join Immortal. Is that the stupidest stipulation of all of wrestling, or is it just me?
Yeah, and they've had him go in and out with that kind of like that before, right?
I'd have to go back. I don't remember. I know they've done this gimmick. I mean, obviously they did it with Cena and Nexus, and what a disaster that whole thing was.
Did Hogan ever get the ring back? I can't remember.
I don't know if he ever asked for it back. I don't know how that whole situation worked.
Or is he holding on to it so Linda couldn't get it?
It's not a bad prediction there, or a bad
how you feeling,
speculation.
By the way?
How am I feeling?
Yes.
I'm not sold on the energy thing.
Okay.
I kind of don't. I feel kind of weird.
Hmm.
Peculiar.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So
I have
anyway.
An after dark about this.
I may have to. I may have to just Google what the hell this Xylitol is. I don't know about that stuff.
Well, hopefully it's nothing you actually have to turn yourself into Carl Stern for.
That's true. All right. Now, speaking of big matches... this is a big match we're never going to see, unfortunately. But Kevin Nash wanted a shoot fight with the Ultimate Warrior. You laugh. Have you been following this story?
Yes, I have.
Why don't you tell everybody what happened?
I've been following at least to the aspect of Kevin Nash, or the Ultimate Warrior, I guess in one of his rambling videos, called Kevin Nash out and put him down for being a guy who, you know, held the young guys down and didn't offer anyone any support and, you know, talked about the clique and how bad they were. And Kevin Nash responded on his Twitter, because this is what we do. Kevin Nash responded on his Twitter that he wanted to shoot fight the Ultimate Warrior. Come on, Jim. I'll put up 10,000. You put up 10,000 and we'll do this. So Jim Hellwig, the Ultimate Warrior, came back with another video. A video I actually watched because I heard he was saying in it, which I haven't seen too many where I haven't thought some things about Jim Helwig. But he cut a very sane promo. He is a sane man. Because he just flat out said, you know what, I'm not an MMA fighter. Kevin, you're not an MMA fighter. They're going to kick our ass. So let's drop the facade that we're tough, you know, going to be over-the-top tough guys here. And for the chump change, his words, that Kevin Nash was offering, why would he do it anyway? Kevin Nash's response to this promo is to say, oh, now you want to go all Dr. Evil on me. Well, come on, we'll do it for free and for fun. Not sure if that actually answered the Warriors video, but yeah, fine. Kevin Nash, I guess, you know, he did the interview with Sean Waltman where he was drinking the wine and you know, running down Sheamus and Wade Barrett and acting, you know, Mr. Tough Guy. And then he comes back to WWE. He gets stonewalled by the crowd chanting what? And it screwed them all up in the promo with CM Punk. You know, he hyped up the fact that, did you hear the response I got at the Royal Rumble? You never got that anywhere close to anything after that. And now with this, it's, you know, it's Kevin Nash in small doses is great. But at this point, you're the old guy at the club. Okay, fine. You're a tough guy. Great. You're the baddest dude. You're still getting laid. All that stuff. Fantastic. Go away. And you even have the Ultimate Warrior now telling you, go away.
Yeah, that's that about covers it. I just think it's hilarious that, you know, Warrior said something about Nash that Nash didn't like, and so Nash was like, well, let's fight! Like, man, if I had to fight everybody that said something mean about me, my God, that's all I would do is fight. What a strange reaction from a 52-year-old man. I don't like what I said. Well, let's have a fight. Let's have a shoot fight.
I mean, Sean Waltman and Juventud Guerrera, not that they wouldn't fight, but, I mean, they would have more of a personal thing and stuff like, I mean, I just, you know, if there's going to be a click member in the mix, I would rather, I guess, see it be him. I just... I don't know. It's just painful. It's just kind of painful, and it would be kind of amusing if there just wasn't a depressing air over it. And I think that's the thing is, okay, you threw it out there. You know, Matt Hardy did it a lot of times in a lot of different ways where it's just like, now no one cares anymore. Just shut up and go away. And Kevin Nash, I think to that point, he started to get that way to a lot of people because that young crowd and the WWE crowd proved it. They don't care what you did in 2000. Again, you're a 50-something-year-old dude. They don't care.
You know, I know that some people like to think, what would happen in a Ultimate Warrior versus Kevin Nash shoot fight? And I don't really think about, like, what would happen, but I often think, like, what is Nash thinking? I mean, what if Warrior would have accepted his challenge? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, Nash, you were a bouncer in your, early 20s, you know? You had buddies there with you, and you were dealing with drunk people. Now you're a 52-year-old man. You can barely walk, which means you can't do any cardio, really. Your knees are shot. You claim to have had heart problems in the past. Whether you did or not, I don't know. And it's like, really, what are you going to do? Are you just going to punch him like in a Western? What do you think is going to happen here? It's just preposterous. You know? Are you gonna punch him and he's going to go off a balcony, a breakaway balcony, and fall into a table down below? What do you actually think is going to happen, Kevin Nash, if you get in a fight with someone?
Like an episode of Prime Time with Heenan and Gorilla?
Yeah. You know? It's like, really, you have no background in any martial art whatsoever. What do you actually think is going to happen in a fight? You guys are just going to go toe-to-toe like Takayama and
you know what? And he's old enough, the only martial art he knows was taught to him by David Carradine because he's the only one old enough to have watched Kung Fu.
Sure. I just always laugh. I mean, it'd be one thing if, like, Kurt Angle got mad and said, hey, let's have a brawl here. Or, you know, or Jack Swagger gets mad at somebody and says, hey, you know, let's do this. Or even Batista, you know. Batista's training all the time. Yeah, it'd be one thing if one of these guys got mad. But Kevin Nash? I mean, this wouldn't even be like a bad heavyweight fight where two guys got blown up because at least they'd know how to throw a punch. It's just preposterous.
Like celebrity boxing-esque.
Worse! It would be worse because they'd never let a 52-year-old celebrity go in there. Never.
What if Nash got in the ring and hurt himself? I know, you know, we'll always go back to making fun of him for, you know, the night on Raw, but what if that actually happened? Because it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. In fact, it's in the realm of great probability, actually. All right, let's move on from that preposterous topic. Who's going to win the Royal Rumble this year?
Randy Orton.
Not a bad pick. Not a bad pick. Randy Orton's out of action currently with a back injury, but the plan for a long time now has been that he's going to win the Royal Rumble, which every time I mention that, people like they say, my God, I'm going to vomit. I don't want Randy Orton winning the Royal Rumble again or for the first time or whatever. Has he ever won the Royal Rumble? I don't think he has. Let me go back. List of Royal Rumble winners here. But that would mean that he would challenge for one of the titles at WrestleMania. Let's say do something at the Elimination Chamber and switch it up. In fact, he did win the Royal Rumble. 2009, he won. So this would be his second Royal Rumble win. How about that? So you're expecting Orton. What do you think is the top of the card for Mania? What's your prediction?
I have no idea. I'm trying to think of the email. Do you do Undertaker and Triple H again?
Well, they are doing that. That's locked.
Okay. So you got that. What's going to be the main event? Bryan Danielson. I would love, and I don't know, the fact that they could be smarmy heels together would be great, but I wish they would keep the belt on Bryan Danielson just up until, so you could have a Jericho-Danielson match. I was praying for that to actually be on WrestleMania because it would be a great showcase. And if you never did anything with Danielson after that, I think that would actually have been great. But then again, with the way Jericho came back, I'm not going to complain. Punk and Jericho, I think, is a realistic possibility. Orton with whoever has one of the titles. And then obviously, and Cena Rock, which I care about seeing so much.
Cena Rock is obviously the main event. We've got Undertaker and Triple H. I strongly suspect that we've got CM Punk versus Chris Jericho. WWE title?
Ziggler, Orton, or, you know.
Actually, I fully expect is that Randy Orton wins the Royal Rumble. Mark Henry, perhaps at the Royal Rumble, defeats Daniel Bryan and Big Show, probably, to win back the world title. Daniel Bryan goes nuts because he lost his belt, turns heel, which means we no longer have to worry about Mark Henry and Daniel Bryan. He'll go after maybe whoever cost him the match or whatever. Maybe they'll do a three-way, and Big Show will cost Bryan the match. Mark Henry wins the belt. Daniel Bryan turns heel, and then you can do Daniel Bryan and Big Show for another couple of shows, which if anybody's going to get a good match out of the Big Show, it's going to be Daniel Bryan. And then I think it's I wouldn't want to say guarantee because nothing is a guarantee, but I would be stunned, actually, if it were not Randy Orton, Mark Henry for the title at WrestleMania, because the rise of Mark Henry was completely built around him destroying Randy Orton match after match, clean. And I'm sure that they probably said, all right, Randy, we got to make this guy. So he's going to beat you clean. Three pay-per-views in a row or whatever. And then you'll win the title back at the biggest show of the year in the main event, one of the main events. And he's like, okay, fine. You know, you'll win the Royal Rumble while you're at it in your hometown. So it's probably an easy thing to talk him into. So I think Orton Henry for the title makes sense for Mania.
Yeah, and it's a professional pound of flesh. Because it's not like he wanted to work with Henry anyway. They had good matches by not doing them on house shows or anything else. It was an example of, as long as they don't touch, it will probably be the best it could possibly go. And that's the way it went. So, yeah, that would make complete sense. Although, again, Orton and Ziggler would be something I'd really like to see, too, if they could twist it that way.
I would guess that the Zigglers and the Alberto Del Rios and the guys in the upper mid-card, I would guess 8 of them in Money in the Bank. A lot of talk of the return of Money in the Bank this year to WrestleMania. You know, they've done a standalone pay-per-view. But I think that, I don't know if they're going to get rid of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I don't think they will. Actually, they're going to get rid of a lot of pay-per-views if the WWE Network thing goes the way they want it.
They should get rid of Money in the Bank.
All of the B shows would be on the network. But A lot of talk that Money in the Bank will be at Mania this year. And I always thought it was better at Mania than as a standalone pay-per-view because, you know, no one buys Money in the Bank pay-per-view, at least, you know, 90,000 domestic, 100,000, maybe 120. I'd have to look at the numbers, but it's not huge numbers. I mean, great pay-per-view, but not huge numbers. And but WrestleMania is the most eyes are going to see this year's Money in the Bank winner. So that's I'd put it on there as just an extra added attraction for the biggest show of the year. All right, we're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, WrestlingObserver.com. Wrestling Observer Live here every Sunday afternoon. Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet. We were talking about WrestleMania before the break. Rock is returning for the main event. Rock returned at Survivor Series, and the show did 160,000 buys in the U.S., a disastrous number. It was actually, the original number was 180, which was disastrous, and it turned out that it was actually even less, 160 domestic. It was only up 16,000 buys from last year's domestic number with the return of The Rock to the ring for the first time in 7 years. That's what happens when you book a main event that nobody wants to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's having your TV show not make any sense. It's having, again, a million and one ways they could have went with this. You asked yourself, how are they going to do it for a year? They're going to have problems with it, but how could they screw it up? And in a lot of ways, they've really, really screwed it up. Jericho's not meaning what he's probably going to over the next couple of weeks. It's just it's hard to have faith because you got The Rock and Cena, and it's just, to me, it has not melded, and the story hasn't melded, and they haven't worked it where it's made enough sense going into WrestleMania, at least not as of now. They could turn it around the next 4 months and really crank it up, but, you know, it does. I'm not shocked. I actually was thinking more like 120. I'm really actually surprised it was that high because it's like Punk and Money in the Bank. Yeah, it was a failure. But, you know, it's not because the thing wasn't exactly the super hottest thing or as much as we thought it was. It's got something to do with that. But it's also the fact that people, look, they're just burnt out. They're not. They have no faith to buy. They could always buy it later if they wanted to, if they hear it's any good. But they don't have any faith to go out and buy it, even with The Rock.
All right, everybody. We're out of time. We'll talk more about this next week. You can always check us out at WrestlingObserver.com. Sign up, $10.99 a month, daily radio show. Sometimes, like this past Thursday, 3 shows in a single day. No shortage of audio. We'll talk to you again next week, however. Lots of stuff to cover. Should be a good time. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Have a good week. We'll talk to you again after a while.